Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studio, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. Had some technical issues this morning, but shout out to our engineering crew for getting all of that figured out. If you couldn't hear us streaming this morning or on TuneIn or your Google Home or your Alexa, that is why, but we should be back and running today. D-Mace, Willie D., how are we doing today? Happy Thursday.
Hey, doing well. Happy Thursday. We're past hump day. Now we're ready.
I know Caroline's got pep in the step, too. The LSU's still alive.
Exactly. LSU is still alive.
I think that between the most important games of the year, Tennessee game, the second game may have been 1A. Last night was 1B. That was huge for LSU to stay alive. Now they force a game two against Wake Forest.
I'm picking LSU. Their ace is going to be on the mound. I'm picking LSU to win this one. They played it perfectly to not have to play your ace in the, you know, the first of the elimination games. Because, you know, if you lose that game, you're done.
You're done. You go home.
But you don't have to use your ace, but you still get good pitching and good hitting, especially down the stretch. They had, what, two on, one out, and that pitcher, when it brought in a relief pitcher, he shut him down.
Got themselves out of a jam.
Oh, my goodness. Lefty. Oh, my goodness. And now they get their guy. They get their guy on the mound tonight. Man, I'm picking LSU.
You and me both, D-Mace.
I got LSU.
I knew if we just got past last night, then our ticket to the College World Series, not quite punched, but I feel really, really good about it.
I wonder what the line is on that game today.
Well, let's remember, Wake Forest has an ace.
I know.
Who was going to be a high first-round pick.
Yes.
And he – so this could be, if they both pitch, which I'm sure they're –
this could be an
I'm
epic.
Pretty sure they're going to.
It's epic.
It's a great question what the line is. I don't know.
I wonder what the line is. I'm sure Wake Forest may be favored in this one.
Maybe so.
But it can't be by
– but anytime.
But a run, if that – you know, a run maybe.
Right.
I guess it would have to be a run.
Half a run.
Yeah, half a run. I don't know. How do you do it with baseball?
I guess we could find this, right, with all the things that we have
Zen
going.
Sports. Go to
yeah,
Zen
we'll
Sports.
Check in on
but
it.
Yeah, I go to Zen Sports to check it out.
I don't make the odds, but my concern if I'm LSU is that Skeens has been obviously going deep in the pitch count.
And he's only on 4 days of rest. Five days, I guess.
It's less rest than normal, and he threw over 120 pitches, I think, on Saturday. So he's had rest. Like, if you're thinking about Major League Baseball.
He's on Major League rest.
He's on Major League rest. That's not a big deal. But Major League pitchers usually don't throw 120, and he's done it more than once. Now, he's a big guy. His frame is probably cut out to being able to do that and still recover. But I would still be concerned. And LSU has pulled the rabbit out of their hat with relievers night after night. The big lefty. What's his name? He's done really, really well.
It's Ackenhausen and Riley Cooper.
Cooper has thrown back-to-back nights now.
Yeah.
So that would concern me a third straight game because he's been the guy that's closed it out and done a really good job. Can he do it again like if Skeens gets – like he did on Saturday. Cooper came in. Skeens went 7 1/3, 7 2/3. Cooper was able to close it out.
After
now, third straight
another
night,
reliever threw one pitch for a three
for
run
a home
homer.
Run. Yeah, and Guidry, he's good. Of course, there's always got to be a Guidry on an LSU team,
right? Exactly.
There always seems to be one.
There's
Louisiana
always
Lightning,
a Jobert, a Guidry, a Dugas, a Boudreaux, or a Thibodeau. You take your pick.
So Rhett Lauder, of course, is a guy that will be a very high first round pick as well.
He's a heck of a pitcher.
He didn't pitch great in the first game, but because of that, he only pitched 5 1/3, 5 2/3, I think. So he's going to be more rested.
Still a solid outing for a starter, 5 2/3.
Yeah, and he only gave up two runs, but that was considered not a good outing for him. So that's how good this kid is. It has a chance to be a great, great college baseball game. I am excited to kick back and watch that.
I feel the same way about this game that I did going back whenever LSU hosted Tennessee in the regular season. It was Dolander and Skeens. And I thought there's probably, you know, you can't speed around Alec Box Stadium that night because there's going to be so many radar guns at that game from Major League Scouts. Same thing tonight. You know, you got two of the best pitchers in the country, and it is win or go home. It is win in advance of the College World Series Finals. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are the kind of things that you dream about. These are the kind of situations that you talk about. You know, you got two of your aces on the mound in one of the most important games of the season. I mean, it's going to be exciting for sure. I am fired up about it, I know for certain. Before we get into what I wanted to talk about, first, D-Maze, I will give you the floor to defend yourself because I was just on with Chase McCabe. And we were talking about Jacksonville versus Tennessee, the gap between Jacksonville and Tennessee. And I personally don't think it is a very wide gap. You do. You think that Jacksonville is far and beyond the Tennessee Titans. Also, our D-Hop, Chris Moore conversation, we were poking a little fun at you.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to give it, I'm going to give you the floor to give it right back.
Absolutely. For one, I don't think I ever said that as a team, Jacksonville is far beyond the Tennessee Titans. As an offense, I believe they are. And you just look at the rosters from an offensive standpoint. You look at, you know, 11 or 12 for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, 11 and then bringing that third receiver, 12. And then you look at the 11 or 12 for the Titans. I think from top to bottom, from an offensive standpoint, Jacksonville has them beat. Because I think the pass catchers, even the tight end, as much as I love Chika Conquo, I think Evan Engram at this, it's almost like they're, I'm not going to say they're both a wash because they're both dynamic players, I believe, but I give Engram the nod because of his experience. He's been in the league long enough. He understands it. You know, he knows what it takes to be a highly productive player in this league. Chig is just learning, but Chig's going to be damn good. But I just think from a from its totality, the Jacksonville Jaguars have the best offense, the best offensive play caller in Doug Peterson, who is their head coach as well. From a defensive standpoint, the Titans have them. You know, Jacksonville's defense is good, but I think as we sit – the Titans' defense is a little bit better. Now, it's not head and shoulders, you know, better than Jacksonville's, but it is better. Both teams finish the lower part, a little bit below average in defense last year. Both teams, I think they were like 17-18 or 18-19. Both of them are right there. One was good in one was good at run stopping. The other was good at pass stopping, whatever you want to call it. But I just think if you look at this team as a whole, Jacksonville, this is a better team than the Tennessee Titans as we sit. I think from an offensive standpoint, they have more proven qualities on offense than the Tennessee Titans. The Tennessee Titans have two proven commodities on offense. That's the running back and the quarterback. Mm-hmm. Well, Jacksonville got a little bit more than that. And they've added another. And people, and I heard Chase this morning, and he was right in a sense that when we talk about Jacksonville, I look at Jacksonville as a team ascending, as I did 5 years ago with the Tennessee Titans. Mm-hmm. They were a team ascending. And those close games that they were losing, they started to figure out a way to win those close games. I don't understand why that is not the same with Jacksonville. I think we have this. With me, I just call it how I see it on both sides. Yeah. So you can never say, well, he's a homer. Or because when it's good, y'all know I call it good. But when it's bad, I'm going to call it bad too. I just look at this from this standpoint. When the Titans were losing those close games, when Vrabel first got the job, what did we say? They're close games, Vrabel, they got Henry. Oh, they're going to be able to do it the next following year. And they were. They were able to do it. They got to the AFC Championship game. The next following year, they got the number one seed. So all that stuff that we were saying about the Tennessee Titans and losing close games, it came true. They started figuring out how to win those close games. Mm-hmm. Willie even brought up the statistic before the season started, where people said maybe this year, those close games, they're not going to be able to win them this year. And they were not. Now, some of it probably was because of injury. Mm-hmm. You can say that, absolutely. But if we are to say that about our Tennessee Titans, why can't then we look at Jacksonville and see what they're doing and think the same thing? Because I guarantee you, if Trevor Lawrence was on our team and played the way he did last year for us, starting off slow and then picking up steam toward the end of the season, you know what we'd be saying?
What?
Oh, this team is on their way to the Super Bowl.
They're on the
rise. Oh, my goodness, look at them. We won't say, oh, Jacksonville got hurt and they dropped the last seven games. We would say, well, that was their fault. We got better as they were getting hurt.
Never said it wasn't the Titans' fault. And I'm not reluctant to say that the Jags are on the rise. I do think that they're a young team with a young quarterback that I think still has some stuff left to prove.
But the Titans were that same team 5 years ago, right? Young team.
Yeah.
Fairly young quarterback. I mean, he had been in the league already 8 years, I believe. But he was ready to sort of take off.
Yeah.
Well, there was encouraging. When he took over, it looked like a fit pretty much right away, which mm-hmm. was surprising.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But once we got over the surprise of it, you're like, ooh.
This team is going to do something
here. Exactly. Yeah, they've actually found the right
and
guy.
And I don't understand. I don't understand why people, when I talk about stuff like this, people say that I'm hating on the Titans. No, I'm not.
I'm just giving
a reality. If reality is hate, then so be it. I'm hating all day.
But my reality
is I'm seeing the Jacksonville Jaguar team do the exact same thing that the Titans did 5 years ago. That's all I'm seeing.
I am right on Derek's coattails on this, and you guys know this. And Chase will remember this. I was saying it a lot. Derek will too. Last season, early in the year, Jacksonville was losing
close games.
But they were losing close games that they really statistically should have won at least a few of them. So you could see it brewing, mm-hmm. and now it's starting to come together. So I am a believer in Jacksonville as well.
They had Philadelphia, I think it was Philadelphia. They had Philadelphia up 14 points. Had Philadelphia up 14 points, probably a little bit more than that. And because they were a young team, they didn't know how to hold on to the lead. Mm-hmm. And they end up losing that game.
Well, I could say the same thing about the Titans.
Yeah,
They lost a whole lot of close games.
Exactly.
The Giants, it came down to a missed mm-hmm. field goal. With the Raiders, you know, it came down to the last second. That's a game that the Titans ultimately did win, but it came down to the last second. So
when they were 7-3, they were still in that mode of they're winning the close games. And a lot of the analytics mm-hmm. people were saying, they can't keep living this dangerously because and winning this many. And then the injuries got to the point where they were not, they collapsed. They were not winning in close games anymore.
And they were able to win close games or weren't able to win those close games that came down to the wire of the Chargers or the Bengals, those games that really came down to the last wire because of what they did in the second half. Let's remember, for the first few weeks, it was mm-hmm. a tale of two Tennessee Titans. In the first half, offense looked good. They were able to put up 2-3 touchdowns in the first half, and then they were essentially absent offensively mm-hmm. in the second half. So how much has that changed? And how much has that changed just because of one person? I want to get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app. Hey, Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace is brought to you by the new Zen Sports Sportsbook with cash rewards and the easiest, simplest betting experience possible. Betting just got better. So download the Zen Sports Book app today. Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet, and the 32 Thoughts podcast will join us at 1 o'clock. We are less than a week away from the NHL draft, so we'll get all of Elliot's thoughts on the NHL draft in our city. It's going to be an absolute blast.
It's a loaded draft. All kinds of discussion, debate going on. What's going to happen? Mm-hmm. Our team's trading up, trading down. Predators with 13 picks.
Woo-hoo.
Two in the first round, two in the second, three in the third. So they're going to be a team people are watching to see what they're going to do here. And Look, you may not know the names, and I understand that. I don't know all the names, but I'm starting to learn the guys at the top. Mm-hmm. There's some really intriguing storylines beyond Connor Bedard. Mm-hmm. Like, they're the next three guys, four guys, are supposed to be really, really good. And then there's this X factor, this Russian kid, that is a little bit of a mystery. Mm-hmm. When's he coming over? Does he want to stay in Russia? Does he want to pick his team? But he's got this upside that is really, really intriguing. Michkov is his name.
Now, the reason,
pick his team?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, the reason he's doing these interviews, it's like what Yager did a long time ago, Willie, where it was, hey, I don't want to take these interviews with these teams. So I just want to interview with these ones and see if, I'm telling them I'm going to go back home or I don't want to play for you. So that's why it's a little dicey, I would say.
Very mystery. There's always a mystery factor with Russians to start with because they have the opportunity to stay in the KHL and play at home for about as long as they want. There's also a little bit of a tug of war sometimes. If you want to play in the KHL, they're going to keep you there. And if you're not happy there, they can make your life miserable.
Jeez.
So it's tricky. So, for example, Kirill Kaprizov, sixth round, because a lot of people were like, he's Russian. You know, they're
going to stay, not worth the investment.
It seems like we're now a wave where it's a little bit more of a, okay, let's go with the Russians. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to work more often than not. But this guy has got some intrigue, as Nick has been saying. He's only granting interviews. He's making it hard to talk to. He's hard to read. Does he want to play with Ovechkin? I mean, these are all the other things. Is he trying to angle and leverage his way to the teams he's interested in playing for?
It also sounds like
an Eli Manning kind of thing.
Right.
Jalen Carter kind of situation. I'm not taking any meetings with any teams outside of the top 10.
The only other thing I have to add on top of him is he's getting here kind of late, too. So that's one thing to consider. He is going to
like
be
getting to Nashville late?
He is going to be in Nashville, but he's getting here kind of right up against it.
Not going to hang out on Broadway?
Yeah. Right.
Well, we'll ask Elliot about him at one, because what Elliot said on his most recent podcast, too, is you might have to wait 3 years before he comes over from Russia, even though he may be talented enough to help you in the next year or two. So are you willing to wait for the magic that he might be providing?
Interesting.
His upside. So would you take him, would you not? Like Barry Trotz says, give me the guys who can get the crowd up off their seats. He might be that kind of talent, but are you willing to wait for that kind of talent?
And Elliot
said, risk that he'll just stay in Russia.
Elliot said that this team under Barry Trotz, as it was under David Poile, they're willing to take some risks. They're willing to be bold. So what exactly does that look like? We'll talk with Elliot at 1 o'clock, so you do not want to miss that. But I want to get into this because we're talking about kind of the differences, the gap potentially between the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Tennessee Titans. Because I think that you could look at it and say, well, the Titans lost 7 games in a row. My goodness, are they sliding? And I think once you add a little bit of context as to exactly why that 7-game losing streak happened, Ryan Tannehill gets injured, your offensive coordinator gets a DUI in the middle of the season. That doesn't help. Your general manager gets fired in the middle of the season. I mean, once that halfway point happened for the Tennessee Titans in the middle of the season, everything went downhill. But I do wonder how much of that has changed this year. Of course, getting healthy, that's huge. Getting Harold Landry back is huge. Getting a healthy Ryan Tannehill back is huge. Treylon Burks, Kyle Phillips being able to stay on the field if they can, that is huge. And I think that those are going to kind of bridge some of the gaps between that 7-game losing streak Titans and potentially Titans that could win the AFC South. But I do wonder how much of a difference is it with a new play caller? Warren Sharp put this out last night on Twitter. And Warren Sharp, he is the head of Sharp Football Analysis. Willie, this is going to be one of your guys. You can totally deep dive into the analytics.
I can't wait till the book comes out.
Has he provided any detail to what
we're about to hear? Well, the book actually hadn't come out yet. Okay. It comes out in, I think he said, mid-July, somewhere around there. But didn't he give like a few snapshots?
Little tidbits. Yeah.
Okay, and so let's present this, because this is going to wow. Remember how much of a lightning rod topic Downing was, even just before the DUI, and then since then, it's been something.
Mentioning Todd Downing's name alone in the middle of the season last year. That was enough to make every single Titans fan want to turn off their radio and just get absolutely just irate. I did think at some points Todd Downing received maybe unfair criticism, but I think the biggest thing with Todd Downing was he just didn't have a feel for the game. He was just calling plays all willy-nilly. But Warren Sharp tweeted this out last night, said, "I spend a lot of time objectively researching every team each offseason, looking for a good and bad and being as open-minded as possible. But one thing that I will never be talked off of is my belief that Todd Downing was a double agent trying to make life difficult for the Titans offense. And Warren Sharp, you're not alone there, because I feel like a whole lot of people in this town agree." Said on first downs, Tennessee had the number two highest run rate, so ran the ball the second most of any team in the league on first down, despite defenses stacking the box at the number four highest rate. To be expected. You've got Derrick Henry. They're going to stack the box, especially when you don't have very many threats at the receiver position. Unsurprisingly, the runs ranked number four worst in efficiency. But nothing stopped them from running into loaded boxes. Not even the fact that first down passes ranked number three in efficiency. So that's the wild thing here, because I've asked myself, well, yeah, you're going to run the ball on first down because you got Derrick Henry.
Mm-hmm.
But I think part of this story that I think is really important is the Titans had the number three efficiency in passing game. And look, I'm here to say that I've goofed and laughed about the efficiency stat before, but my thing with analytics is if it's telling me something that I haven't seen with my eyes, I don't know how much I can really believe it. Mm-hmm. But I do think that analytics are supplementary to what I can see.
And that's what it's there for, really, right, is to cross-check our eye tests, mm-hmm, with what the numbers are saying. And then a good coach, a good GM will put these together and come up with the thing. That's something that I had pointed out a few times. Football Outsiders had that going for a while until Ryan Tannehill got hurt. And, you know, then Burks, and then there was a lot of things that contributed, then the DUI and all of that. But there was a time where they were really passing the ball much more efficiently than it would appear.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it was tied into how poorly they were playing in the third or fourth quarter. Sometimes they were ahead and trying to protect leads, but that is an interesting cross-check with what the Football Outsiders were saying. So maybe there's hope for the passing game from these numbers. Is that kind of what you take out of it?
That's kind of what I'm seeing is, and this is another part to Warren Sharp's tweets. It says their first down runs did almost nothing but force them into third downs. Highest rate of being forced into third downs after a first down run in the NFL, but they repeated it over and over and over. So I kind of think two ways about it. Part, mm-hmm, of it is, well, when you have Derrick Henry, you're going to run the football.
Mm-hmm.
And how much of this is games like the Chiefs or the Texans game that Malik Willis started? You're going to run the football on first down. Mm-hmm. You're going to, even if it doesn't really make sense, because you don't necessarily want Malik Willis with the ball in his hands. So I do think that that adds a little bit of understanding to it, a little bit of explanation behind it. But that was only a couple of games. This is the sample size of the season as a whole. So this kind of, all of this breakdown, all of this, these findings from Warren Sharp lead me to believe, how much better is this Titans offense simply because Todd Downing is not calling the plays anymore?
Well, we won't know until the season starts. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say Todd Downing was the best play caller. He wasn't even close. Again, I think, you know, just about every offensive coordinator, I believe, in this league has the ability to put together a good game plan for that week's opponent. It's the ones that are able to not just call the plays during the game, but are able to adjust to what's happening in the game. That's what separates the good ones from the great ones, or the okay ones from the really good to great ones. Guys that are able to, you know, in the middle of the game, you know, change the course of action, adapt to what's going on. Guys that are not just so bullheaded to say it's either my way or no way. This is the way we're going to do it. You find ways to incorporate your playmakers. When they take out one of your playmakers, you find a way to incorporate another one. Or a guy that may not have been making plays for you, but all of a sudden you put him in a situation or you start to call some plays because of the way the defense is playing. And now this guy that was a no-show, he ends up, you know, impacting the game in a positive way because you have found a way to sort of shift your offense or sort of combat what the defense is doing. Those are the really good play callers. And we know who those guys are, Andy Reid, Kyle Shanahan, guys like that, Doug Peterson, guys that are able to adapt as the game is going. Now, we can blame it on Todd Downing, and you know what? Because he's not here, won't nobody say anything. But
nobody will defend
it. Yeah, nobody will defend it. Just like nobody will defend, we can blame John Robinson for what happened. He's not here to defend himself. So, right. You know, everybody's going to pile on him. But let's just think about it. Who hired the guy? Vrabel.
Vrabel. Yeah.
And after the first season when it wasn't going as well, who retained the guy?
Vrabel.
Vrabel. Mm-hmm. Don't you, as much as we talk about how, and this is, I'm only talking as if I'm hearing other people talking about Vrabel, and I've always said this. If y'all consider him such a great coach, y'all shouldn't be worried about anything else. Y'all should be, hey, Vrabel's going to get those guys going. They're going to play for him. And I get that. But if you think that Vrabel isn't to blame in this as well, you're out your damn rabbit mind. Because Vrabel, he has his hands in everything that goes on.
Right, he has a vision of what he wants this offense to be.
And he said it before, prior to him saying we got to get faster. He said, we're a run team. So Vrabel could have easily walked into that room and say, hey, listen, we need to change courses. We need to start doing something else because this ain't working.
Vrabel is culpable to a certain extent.
Okay, exactly. Well, and let's use the example that Warren Sharp is putting out there.
Uh-huh.
Too many first down runs that put them in bad situations.
Well,
let's get that on the other side.
Because
I've got some other things to supplement that with.
Perfect.
To get into a discussion about the effectiveness of Derrick Henry in all of this, too.
Let's get to that on the other side, the effectiveness of Derrick Henry. Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. And Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Hey, do not miss the Broadway Block Party this Monday through Wednesday as Music City welcomes a week full of events featuring the NHL Awards, the 25th Anniversary Concert, and NHL Draft. Fans can enjoy this free party featuring live music, red carpet walks, games, alumni autographs, giveaways, food trucks, activations, and so much more. So don't miss this incredible week of events starting Monday as the Preds celebrate 25 years. More information on NashvillePredators.com. Breaking down Warren Sharp's analytical breakdown of the Titans' play calling this past season. Says that the Titans, despite having one of the lowest efficiency rates of running on first down, they ran at one of the highest rates on first down in the National Football League. Willie, you said you have some numbers, some breakdown that can provide a little bit of context here.
Mm-hmm. It's something that if you listen to our show, you know I harp on this, is you can't just look at yards, right? We just had the whole discussion about DeAndre Hopkins and what went into the 717 yards.
Mm-hmm.
We hear this a lot with Derrick Henry. He had 1,530 yards. And yes, that's nothing to sneeze at, right? 1,500 yards is 1,500 yards. But with the analytics, and this is where Warren Sharp is going, is what did you get for those 1,500 yards?
Mm-hmm.
If it's too many unsuccessful runs, for example, that he's given you on first down, then maybe you shouldn't be running as much. Maybe you'd be better with Derrick Henry having 1,200 yards, but on better situations where it's more favorable and he's going to have better runs, right? So that's where efficiency is important, right? What are the 1,500 yards getting you? And what are you paying your running back for those 1,500 yards? That is where I think Tim Kelly and Rand Carthon, with his new sets of eyeballs, with a little more emphasis on analytics, if Tim Kelly is open to that, what's the best way to use Derrick Henry? Mm-hmm. It's a huge question, mm-hmm. I think, for this offense. And I'm not saying necessarily give him the ball 100 times left, but when do you throw it? Like you said, should you throw it more on first down?
Mm-hmm.
And should Derrick Henry be on the field for more third downs and catch a few more passes?
Yes.
Maybe, but what if you have a really good guy in Spears? Maybe mm-hmm. he's the guy that you should be using a little bit more. But I think all of the answers to these questions, that's what goes into efficiency. That's why when you sit there and go, well, I don't really care what they say, 1,500 yards is really good. But efficiency-wise, you heard Warren Sharp, and then cross-checking that with Football Outsiders, Derrick Henry, despite the 1,500 yards, did not rate very high in efficiency. He was anywhere from 16 to 29 in the different metrics, even though he had way more yards than most of the guys in front of him.
And
does that make sense? Like,
it does.
The successful, like, if you need 1 yard on third and one and you get 1 yard, you only get 1 yard, but it's a successful run.
Yes.
Right? If you are third, if it's first and 10 and you get 3 yards, that's not really a successful run. That's, you know, that's not the worst thing in the world, but if you get 2 or 1, or these are the things that put you behind the sticks, and now your offense is in trouble.
And what other things do you have to keep into consideration when looking at the efficiency? Derrick Henry was running behind a horrendous offensive line.
I think that's the biggest thing.
That's another part.
Todd Downing's play call, like, called a whole lot of runs on first down. So how much are you really just setting up Derrick Henry to fail when you call yet another run on first down and there's 4 guys in the box just waiting to take Derrick Henry down half a yard downfield?
Yeah, and you also know that if you're, this is where I've always given Todd Downing a little bit of slack. He was not dealt a great hand. He knew that he had a better run blocking offensive line than pass blocking. Right? They were a bad pass protection team. Mm-hmm. They were not good at all. And you're not exactly throwing to Jerry Rice and John Taylor.
No.
Right?
No, not at all.
Derek Mason and Drew Bennett. Like, pick your good combination. They didn't really have that last year. So that's probably going to the, well, let's just run the heck out of it and play good defense and keep the game close. There were some games where they tried to win the old-fashioned college football, call it Ohio State, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, right? Let's win 14 to 10. And it worked a couple of times.
Well, you got to, I think in those numbers, and I'm not saying those numbers are not correct. I believe they are. But again, you got to watch this team and you got to know that, you know, from a strength and weakness, the weakest part of this team, everybody can agree, was the offensive line. So to say that he sabotaged this offense, I would say this offense was sabotaged by the moves that were made. And he was just the one left holding the cup. Like, okay, what am I supposed to do with this? You traded away my best wide receiver. You didn't sign, you know, you didn't address the offensive line the way you should have. And now I'm supposed to take this and do what with it? Okay, if you want me to be a running team, then okay, I'm going to do what I can to the best of my ability as a play caller. You understand that. That's why you're not asking me to change anything, because you understand that the minute we get in pass pro, that's not good for Ryan Tannehill. It's just not. Now, could they have possibly thrown the ball a little bit more? Yeah, you can say that. But to say that Todd Downing sort of mastermind this whole thing to sabotage the offense, again,
I think that was kind of a joke from
me. I know. Yeah. But again, he's not the head honcho. He's just a guy that has to call the plays. And listen, just about everybody covets that offensive coordinator position, because if you do well, it leads to what? A head coaching position. But if I have, that's why some coaches choose not to take jobs as an offensive coordinator if they aspire to be a head coach. Because some offenses they're looking at, they're like, nah, I'm not touching that offense because if it doesn't go right, I will get blamed for it, even though I'm not the person that put this together. But I will get blamed for it. Todd Downing wasn't the best offensive coordinator out there. I will admit that. But he didn't put this roster together from an offensive standpoint. He didn't say, hey, John and Mike and Amy, go ahead and trade away A.J. Brown.
Well, I think both things can be true. That Todd Downing was dealt probably not the best hand, but also Todd Downing's play calling didn't really do much to help himself.
His play calling didn't help him. Mm-hmm. He didn't help himself with the play calling. But to say that, well, they should have ran, you know, or thrown the ball 100 times more, one, they really didn't have no consistent pass catchers. They didn't have no consistency in the passing lineup. You know, guys were in and out of the lineup. And then guys you brought in here to do the job didn't do it. So
you and they didn't pass protect very
exactly.
well.
Exactly. You're not pass protecting very well.
At no left tackle.
And your quarterback was hurt.
Your quarterback is hurt.
Couldn't move.
You know, your receiver, your number one receiver is in and out because of injury, and he's a rookie. Your number two receiver is still getting over an ACL. Your number three receiver is a number three or a four. I mean, you were set up not to succeed the way you wanted to from a passing standpoint.
And that's why I think some of the weeks, especially when Malik Willis was quarterbacking or you had a Ryan Tannehill playing on one leg, mm-hmm. the game plan, this is where I would challenge Sharp, is to say, okay, I think Mike Vrabel was basically saying the only way we win these games is just
run the heck out of it.
We don't care if we don't score very much. Let's keep the clock running. Let's try to get some turnovers, and let's win with the best thing we got. That's our defense. And it almost worked at Arrowhead, right?
It almost worked.
Yeah. And that was against Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. It almost worked. So I think that was the thing. Hey, look, this is what we have. We got to try to make it work with what we have.
But
that didn't make it easy for the offensive numbers or the offensive coordinator.
Right. And I totally think that's part of it. I don't think that just the play calling alone was the reason why the Titans struggled offensively. You know, injuries are part
of
it. Offensive line, some of the moves by John Robinson.
Everybody
are part
was
of the reason why. And that's why
everyone was culpable in it.
That's why John Robinson paid for it with his job. Yeah. But I do think that it is part of it because I don't think that it was, you know, the lack of offensive line mm-hmm. and Ryan Tannehill being injured. That was the reason why Derrick Henry wasn't on the field on 3rd and 4. You know, I don't think that it's because of injuries that, you know, Derrick Henry taking snaps out of Wildcat didn't work, or the jet sweep to Chigakonkwo against the New York Giants, or Malik Willis fumbling the football when they ran a jet sweep from Ryan Tannehill to Malik Willis. Little things like that, that injuries are part of it. Offensive line is part of it. Treylon Burks being injured and in and out of the lineup totally is part of it. Ryan Tannehill being injured is part of it. The play calling also wasn't great. So I do think that Tim Kelly being in place of Todd Downing, it does help this offense. How much? I don't know. You still got injuries that are going to be part of it. I still don't know how much better the offensive line is going to be. Can Treylon Burks stay healthy? I don't know. Those are all things that we're going to find out. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Let's get in some of your thoughts on this because we've got loaded phone lines and we are right to those coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063 The Game.
Again, just continue to hone in on his craft and understanding the assignments and the details of what he's supposed to be doing and how he can run routes and maybe different tempos of routes, what he's looking at. He's continuing to build on his knowledge of coverages and what the defense is trying to do. So, again, as he continues to do that, he'll continue to get better. In the past game,
I remember with the running backs used to do cut ups for Derek and those guys. Have you started doing that at all for these tight ends?
Yes. I've gone through and we'll go through and find different people, different schemes around the league, and you know, schemes that have been successful, players that are successful. Even going back to Delanie Walker here in his early years, in 16 and 17, and pulling some of those cuts, he did a really good job as a route runner. There are some things that he did that I've been able to show these guys, and to be able to learn from some of those guys that have been here, and then obviously around the league with different tight ends and the different things that they do. So we'll always do that. One, for myself to learn, but also to be able to show the guys different examples of different ways to do things.
That was Tony Dews, Titans tight ends coach, which does feel kind of weird to say. So he used to call him the running backs coach.
Exactly.
Tight ends coach. And we will get into the tight ends. We'll get into their usage in Chigakonkwo. But first, I want to get into your text. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you have a thought. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We are discussing Warren Sharp's most recent tweet thread about Todd Downing's play calling and just how much the Tennessee Titans ran the football. Let's get your thoughts. Ben from Nashville, Texan, says, I think the analytics behind Henry's usage on 3rd and medium or 3rd and short would be interesting. He needs to be used as a threat to run, even if they opt to pass. I felt like Todd just never consistently put his best players on the field, even as distractions. I would agree. if it's 3rd and 8, you're probably not running the football. Mm-hmm. But if Derrick Henry is on the field, then you force the defense to have to pay attention to him. So even just, you know, the players who were on the field, I think, was a problem for Todd Downing last year. The personnel seemed very obvious to me.
3rd and 8 would, to me, is not would not be the example. It's more like that 3rd and 3, 3rd and 4, where I think you're thinking
run.
The run is a real option. I mean, 3rd and 8, not many teams are going to run. Yeah. But there's that right in between where I think it was a dilemma, and this is a new question for Tim Kelly, of when do I take Derrick Henry off the field, and when do I keep him in? When it's 3rd and whatever the situation, right? And then how good are the other guys? That's the other. Like, for a while, I thought Hilliard was really playing well. He was playing great as that 3rd down guy. He was making big plays.
And Deontay Foreman, 2 years ago.
Well, 2 years ago.
I know, but
I'm talking about as a third, purely 3rd down. What they were doing before Hilliard got hurt for a while was working pretty well.
Yeah.
Where he was not only converting 1st downs, he made some of the most explosive plays they had, right? He had some big plays, touchdowns from way out, the explosive plays that the offense needed badly. So it's a double-edged sword, and this is a new question for Tim Kelly.
Well, he led the team in touchdown receptions, Dontrell Hilliard, with 4.
And he didn't play the whole season.
And he didn't play the whole season.
Oh, my gosh.
And I understand what the texter is saying. Well, the personnel. Were we not talking about this during the season, the beginning of the season, the middle of the season?
Totally.
Like, where's Chigakonkwo? Where is Dontrell Hilliard? More importantly, those two guys. I specifically mentioned it, just screaming. Like, use Dontrell Hilliard more. My thing is this. When you have these guys, and again, I guess this is the new way of doing NFL, is different personnels, all these different personnels, different packages. I get it. We used to do it back in the day. But the difference here was, I don't care what damn package we run, what personnel we run, and I'm just talking about specifically for the Tennessee Titans back in the day. There were 2 or 3 people that were going to be on the field. 2 out of the 3 people that were going to be on the field at all times, regardless of what package we were running. That was myself, Drew Bennett, and at the time, Eddie George.
Your best players should
Your
be on the field.
Your best players, absolutely, should be on the field. And when they're not, or one of them's not, you start to wonder, like, what's really going on? Like, why is it? I don't care if you're going to run the ball. Chigakonkwo, Treylon Burks, if he's healthy, needs to be out there, because Derrick Henry's out there, right? If it's, you know, what, 3rd or 2nd and 5. I know Derrick Henry's going to be out there.
Yeah.
But I need other playmakers out there. I don't need to sub in Treylon Burks for Hollister.
Right. Like, if it's Cody Hollister, Jeff Swaim, and Derrick Henry on the field, I have a pretty good idea of what you're going to do.
I know what you're doing, more than likely. I know what you're doing. But if Derrick Henry, Chigakonkwo, and Treylon Burks is out there, it's a different story.
Makes it a little bit more.
It makes it a little bit hard. Or if Dontrell Hilliard, Derrick Henry, and Treylon Burks or Chigakonkwo's out there, then it's something different. We can run or we can pass. We got to be set up for both of them.
You're saying you would have liked to have seen Henry and Hilliard on the
field? I would have liked to see, and I think that's why they drafted Spears, because Spears gives them the opportunity on 2nd and 5 to throw him in to be able to run between the tackles still, or throw a screen, or send him out the backfield on a pass play. So you don't know what we're going to do. He's strong enough to run between the tackles because he's proven it in college. He can get outside the backfield and catch passes because he's proven it in college. He can catch screen plays because he's proven it in college. That's why we chose to draft him in the 3rd round rather than a receiver, because we believe he can be a dynamic player for us. So they got to figure out how to use that guy like they didn't use Dontrell Hilliard. They started to use Dontrell Hilliard toward the end of the season, but after everybody got hurt.
Right, like, but Hilliard was hurt, too.
Yeah, Hilliard was hurt, too. But my thing is, again, you got to be able to identify your playmakers. And in identifying your playmakers, making sure that they're on the field at all, just about all times. I've always said, Treylon Burks, if I'm the receiver coach, you ain't coming out the game until you're ready to come out the game. And if you're ready, but it's a crucial play, no, you better suck it up, buddy. This is what you get paid for. Mm-hmm. You better take a deep breath and get back out there because we need you. Other than that, you could take two or three plays off. I get it. But when we need you on the field, you're on the field.
Right.
You ain't coming off in two-minute situations, are you? No. Because why? Because we need you on the field. Well, you're not going to come off just in a non-two-minute situation.
And just because you're not running doesn't mean that he needs to be off the field.
Exactly. Just because the play is not coming to you or we're running a football doesn't mean you need to come off the field.
Right.
So Hilliard missed the last four games.
Okay.
Because
he ended up playing, 12 games, I think? Yeah.
And games. I think he got hurt in the Jacksonville game. I feel like it was on a special teams play, if I remember correctly. I might be a little hazy.
The second Jacksonville game where Derek went off in the first half and then they just didn't give him the ball in the second half?
Well, it was the first Jacksonville game.
First
they got away from them in
the
second half.
That's right, the first Jacksonville game. And the second Jacksonville game was the Josh Dobbs game.
And I think that was the game that Hilliard got hurt. So it was really five games. My question is this. This is another one for Tim Kelly. There's no doubt that Derrick Henry had his best his efficiency numbers as a pass catcher way better than they've ever been before and way better than his rushing efficiency. There were a lot of really good screens. I'm curious, what was the down and distance on when he got all these catches? Were they on third down or were a lot of them on first and second down? I feel like a lot of them were on early downs, if I remember correctly, but that's just me thinking off the top of my head. I'd like to see a little more deep dive on that, like a Warren Sharp on, because that's something that you want to consider. If it is third down and you're saying, well, Derrick Henry had a pretty good year catching the ball, can we use that? Because we've always noted he's not a natural route runner, pass catcher. It's not what he does best.
No. He always looks uncomfortable catching footballs.
But the numbers don't lie. From last year, he had almost 400 receiving yards last year. He busted
some long screen
runs.
He was a much better pass catcher last year.
For sure.
But it's mostly screens.
Yeah,
right?
Mostly screens.
Get him out in space, get a couple blockers in front, let him accelerate, and then good things can happen.
He's not running routes. He's not running a five-yard out and then them throwing him the ball. He's not, or running a angle route and them throwing the ball.
So that's what a Todd Downing would say is if he's trying to defend himself. Like, Derrick Henry isn't that guy. If we're going to throw it, he can't, you know, he's not that kind of guy that's going to make the difference. We're better with the guy that is like a Hilliard,
right,
who is more of a threat catching the ball, better
or
at catching
Spears,
the ball.
Maybe.
Hopefully,
yeah,
Spears
will be their Dontrell Hilliard of this season, but better, I believe, if they use him the way they should.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get back into your thoughts, your calls, your texts on this. But coming up next, the NFL hosted a conference, a media press conference discussion, so to speak, about one of the biggest issues that has arisen over this offseason. What do we think about it? And do we think that the NFL is getting closer to finding a solution for this issue? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, Elliot Friedman in 1 hour, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.